Sunday, April 25th, 2010. Pilgrimage to Boston, presented by the Prairie High School RE class.
Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Barbara Park. I'm the finance chair, but more importantly for today, I am the religious education instructor for the high school group. We welcome everybody to Prairie, every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, your sexual orientation, or your family structure. We welcome you no matter your age, your abilities, or your inabilities. Towards the end of the service, we're going to ask visitors or guests, or returning friends for that matter, if you'd like to introduce yourselves and tell us how you ended up here on this rainy day. Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. Sometimes they are presented by Prairie members, sometimes from people of the wider community, and sometimes by our minister, Ralph Trzezinski. Today, our high school group is presenting their program. We're calling it Pilgrimage to Boston, and it's part of their program that they did, their coming of age program that they've been working on all year. And so a lot of the elements of the program, really all of the elements of the program today, will relate to UU history and their experience in Boston. So a lot of the elements will seem odd in a way because they will relate to their trip to Boston and to the foundations of Unitarian Universalism, and remembering kind of the men and women who were our forebearers in our movement. So now, we are going to have our opening words read by Gavin McFarland.
Come into this place of peace, and let its silence heal your spirit. Come into this place of memory, and let its history warm your soul. Come into this place of prophecy and power, and let its vision change your heart.
Now we are going to stand, if you're able, and sing hymn 105, From Age to Age. And now Caitlin's going to read our chalice lighting, and Gavin's going to light our chalice. This will be followed by a minute of silent meditation.
In honor of those we have known and loved in the past, in recognition of the gifts and sacrifices that they have made on our behalf, and in our sincere hopes that we may be worthy of their memory, we light our candles, we give our thanks, and we offer our prayers. Amen.
Now is the time for joys and concerns, when we share with our community important things that have happened in our lives this week. Please wait till you get the microphone so everybody can hear. I know. Just a reminder.
This has been a very eventful week. On Friday, we went to the memorial service for Ruth Hine, who is now one of the conservation heroes of Wisconsin. She was my boss when I was a librarian at the research library, and I saw a lot of my old DNR buddies, and that was a joy. But of course, we're very sad, but everybody has to go sometime. And yesterday, we went to Hugh Eltis's 85th birthday celebration, and that was quite an event. But it was wonderful because Hugh is not in good shape. And it was great for him to hear all the wonderful things that people would say about him instead of waiting until he's gone. Again, I'm sorry I'm taking up so much time, but there is a joy. We got a call from Nevena, our daughter in New Orleans, And she didn't think she could afford to come to WISCON. She usually comes every year for the science fiction convention. But Jean DeMaul, who usually organizes it, couldn't. And so she called Nevena and said, we will pay your membership and your flight to Madison if you will come and organize the convention. So, so that was great. And also, Peter and Iris, our granddaughter, are coming in June, and Nevena will stay the following week, so there'll be an overlap and we'll have a family reunion. What a week, huh?
Last week, of course, was Earth Day on Thursday, the 22nd, and some of you are aware that there was a very good conference here at the Monona Center I went to, sponsored by the Gaylord Nelson Institute. There were lots of people there, I would guess 300, 400, 500, and it was quite an event. And we had wonderful speeches by various people in various workshops. The last lecture was by Robert Kennedy. He talked about an hour and a quarter, I think, without looking at his notes, no notes, about 15 different subjects, most of which were rather depressing. But it was quite an experience. Also, Tia Nelson was there. Gaylord Nelson's daughter, is now very active in the environmental field. She worked for the governor. So by and large, it was very exciting and encouraging that there are so many people now very involved with environmental issues. But at the same time, it's rather depressing because our environmental situation around the world really is rather dismal. There's a lot all of us need to do.
Well, I won't be here next week because I'll be with my mother, and it's kind of a little family reunion. My mother will be 98 on the 6th of May.
Wow.
And we spent some time with her yesterday, Patty and I, and she was in very good shape considering how she had been, like, you know, she's kind of up and down. Her mind was good. She could even write sentences and letters without making mumbo jumbo. And she made conversation with us, and we had a good time singing with her. She likes singing hymns, and I usually take my guitar and we sing with her. So it was it was very encouraging to see her. I think she's going to make it to 98 and maybe more.
I spent a week in California at a reunion of my two brothers and myself, which is marvelous, and I happened to be the one who has all of the family pictures. So I made an album and put reminiscence writing in and took that along with me and was able to duplicate it for my two brothers, which was a great satisfaction. And then I took the Amtrak, a very scenic ride up to Berkeley area, and spent a couple of days with my daughter, so it was really great. But I thought of all of you.
I'd like to add that Felix has started crawling as of yesterday.
So, oh wow!
He's mastered the art of the, as soon as you go out of the room, he changes places. So Kara's watching him downstairs, but if you see him, just return him to his mother.
Well, I have a half a joy, sort of, because you shouldn't count your chickens before they're hatched. But someone told me last Sunday that the crabapple tree in our yard was full of buds. And I went out and looked at it, and it was covered. And you may know that this was planted for my mother when she died in 1998. And this is the third or fourth tree. I've lost count because none of the others have ever bloomed. And so to go out and see those buds, and I've been by here twice this week to see if it has bloomed yet. And yesterday and today, of course, the weather's lousy and I don't see any flowers on it. So I have my fingers crossed. Please pray that we have a tree covered with blooms by next weekend. Yeah. I don't want to get them again. Now, I also have a sort of a sorrow. I'll talk to Kate about this late in a few minutes. Somehow I found myself without long-distance phone connections all week. And since I'm trying to put together this trip for Prairie, I need to make phone calls. And I have this thing going with AT&T and my provider that I have no phone service. So anyhow, that's that.
Well, some of you know Bob Durkin, who has grandchildren about the age of Felix crawling around all over the place, or great-grandchildren, actually. Bob now has two stents in two aortas, he ended up with two complete blockages and is lucky to be here, and we're glad that he is here. He may go home from the hospital soon, and his son is coming to be with him for at least 2 weeks until they... He only has one son. His biological son, I'm sorry. And so he's in good hands. And we did go to visit him. And he's at University Hospital, but I think he may be going home today. I'm not sure. So.
Do you know anything about
she's doing very well. She's in Capitol Lakes. Still in Capitol Lakes, yeah.
We too attended a meeting of sorts this week. It was a two-day bioethics conference at ProMega. We've attended them year after year and find them very interesting. This one was a very, very interesting. They were talking about transcendence and transcendent experiences, and they were talking about what happens in the brain with these experiences, some research, but they were also talking about how these experiences are induced, and they are induced understandably by deep meditation, by many group activities, singing, dancing, but they were also, several of these researchers were studying the psychoactive drugs that some of you young people might remember from the 60s, although to the parents in the 60s, these were sources of great anxiety. But now, finally, there is some bona fide research, but I certainly have mixed feelings about this, that it's not going to solve the world's problems just for people to have this wonderful experience in their heads. But one very pertinent use was a group is doing some research on terminal cancer patients, that the use of these drugs doesn't treat the cancer, but it relieves much of the profound anxiety and depression. So I may be able to tell you some more about it some other time.
So I was looking at my calendar, my little journaling here and there, and I realized, so I've been coming to Prairie for a little bit over a year now. And when I came, the very first time I came, I thought, I really want to find community, you know, to find friendship and family. And I think last night, after Ella ate goose poop in front of a lot of people during the spring fling, and threw like the world's biggest tantrum as we were leaving, it was nice to not have to feel awkward or embarrassed. Like, it was like, okay, well, these guys kind of are my family, and they're accepting of us. So, yay!
I'd like to briefly acknowledge the person who puts these hymnals in the program. That's Catherine. That's Kate Lou's daughter. And she comes and she does it all, and it'd be nice to talk to her and tell her that we appreciate that.
Yeah. I'll see if my voice is working. My one joy is that the laryngitis is almost over. But last week I was in Omaha. helping my daughter find an apartment out there, and she is moving next week. Abby is moving next week to move into like a permanent away place. Her LTE position with the State Historical Society ended about 3 weeks ago, and she's going out to Omaha with no job but an apartment to make a new life. She's got her college friends there, and so we're all excited, but you know, it's hard. So she's at home, well, presumably packing, but I'm guessing she's still in bed. But
I just wanted to say that my nephew, who I mentioned last week, had a bacterial infection. It's cleared up. He's now home, but it looks like he has a heart condition. So he's on a heart monitor, but they are hopeful that things will work out for him. So he's doing all right. And on Wednesday, John and I will celebrate 6 years of wedded bliss. And then the next day, we'll be in Milwaukee for at the Immigration Center for stage two of John becoming a citizen.
Ooh.
So he's well in the process.
Okay, thank you for all your joys and concerns. We're going to have a responsive reading now led by Madeline. And it's 652 in your book.
And in case you didn't notice, it's William Ellery Channing, which you guys heard about at our other presentation. And we got to see the statue of him in Boston, so ties in a little bit. Okay. So you're reading the italicized parts. The great end in religious instruction is not to stamp our minds upon the young, but to stir up their own. Not to make them see with our eyes, but to look inquiringly and steadily with their own. Not to give them a definite amount of knowledge, but to inspire a fervent love of truth. Not to form an outward regularity, but to touch inward springs. Not to bind them by ineradicable prejudices to our particular sect or peculiar notions, but to prepare them for impartial, conscientious judging of whatever subjects may be offered to their decision. Not to burden the memory, but to quicken and strengthen the power of thought.
Not to impose religion upon them in the form of arbitrary rules, but to awaken the conscience, the morals, and the mind.
In a word, the great end is to awaken the soul, to excite and cherish spiritual life.
Nick, can we get the second mic, too? Okay. Come on up. Okay. Okay. Now, as I said, our high school class took what we called a pilgrimage to Boston. And so we're going to have a little panel discussion with some questions by me to elicit some of their experiences. I was the adult that went with them, and we had a wonderful time. Soggy, but wonderful. And I'm going to have them each first introduce themselves and introduce their parents, because their parents were incredibly supportive in allowing them to go and supporting them in their trip.
Hi, everyone. I'm Madeline, and I'm Madeline Arnold, and my parents are Martin Arnold and Rachel Long. You might have seen them before.
Hello, I'm Gavin McFarlane, and my parents are Yvonne Hebert and Doug McFarlane.
Caitlin Nicholson. My parents are Karen Nicholson and John Nicholson. Okay, I'm Caitlin Nicholson. My parents are Karen and John Nicholson.
Her name's Caitlin.
Okay. We're going to start with, well, we're going to have this little panel discussion, and then we're going to show you some pictures so that you'll have some illustrations of what we did. So first I'd like to ask just your general impressions of Boston.
So obviously it was very wet, and so it was hard to get, you know, a sunny, optimistic impression. But it was raining pretty nonstop for the 3 days. But it was different because of just the East Coast nature, all the buildings, more historic, and it was fun to walk around and look at that stuff. But everyone seemed pretty friendly, and it was nice.
Yeah, I mean, along with the rain, it was also very, very windy, and we broke lots of umbrellas, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, I always just sort of assumed I wouldn't like the East Coast as much as the West Coast, and I think, yeah, I mean, I think that's still definitely true. Boston's a pretty cool city, but I don't know. It was cold and wet, and although I have to say, I did like the T, which is their public transportation system. That was great because we were able to get everywhere we needed to go without a car. We could just, you know, take the train and we'd be within walking distance of any place we needed to get to.
Yeah, I sort of just agree with them. So, I don't know. I really liked Boston. I don't know. A lot of my friends have been there and they always said it was really nice, and it was, and if it was raining the whole time. So, yeah.
Obviously, the weather was a major factor. The first morning that we were there, we got in the evening and stayed with a cousin of mine in Cambridge. And then the first morning, we took the famous T to Arlington Street Church. So let's talk a little bit about our visit to Arlington Street Church.
So Arlington Street Church was huge, and it was very formalized looking, I mean, especially compared to Prairie, obviously. There's box pews and like this huge pulpit where the minister is like 10 feet above everyone else. And just, it was kind of strange being separated from everyone, but they tried to like reach out different parts during the service, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, I guess just looking at it, I wouldn't assume that it's a Unitarian Universalist church. It just looks very, like you said, it's very formal looking, and, you know, I guess I'm just sort of used to this very casual setting that we have here. I think I prefer this setting, too. It's a lot nicer. But, yeah, I mean, despite that, it was a very welcoming environment, and it was a fun service to go to.
It was really, it was beautiful, but, yeah. Why is it better here too?
Why don't one of you talk about how they did the joys and sorrows?
Okay, so I think before the service, they had people write down their joys or sorrows on a piece of paper, which was then given to the minister, who would read each one aloud, and then I believe the person who wrote it down would stand up if they wanted to or not. And as they read them aloud, another person would light a candle for each one. And then they had the choir singing sort of throughout the whole thing. And during the sorrows, the song was obviously a little bit more sorrowful. And during the joys, it was more joyful. And provided, I mean, it made a very nice mood.
Somebody want to talk about the lunch?
All right, like after, there was it in the basement? Mm-hmm. They had like lunch. I don't know, they had like a whole bunch, there was like salads and food and soup. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and you could, it was like, you could donate. It was like, I don't know, a dollar or whatever. So it was really nice. You could talk to people and yeah.
Yeah, it was a very nice social time, as well as we were very glad because we had a very small window of time, and so we got lunch, which we don't think we would have gotten otherwise, because we went from there to a play in Cambridge. Can you talk about Were there any things that they did that were different than what Prairie does that you'd like to see Prairie try, or things that were the same that kind of reinforced that it was would really truly still a UU congregation and not not just some foreign group?
Well, definitely the choir was more prominent. They had a lot of songs throughout the service, and with the joys and sorrows, they would sing a little bit and then like hum while the people were reading off the joys and concerns, and so that was nice. More of like a social gathering, and it was nice to have that, but I mean, they have more space than we do, so it's easier for them to do something like that. Yeah, anybody. Just go downstairs and have some food. I think so. We're more focused on the music. But and they also had a minister, which she was really talented. She was talking about, Passover, yeah. It was like the week afterwards, so she was talking about Passover. And just, it was like a UU message, but incorporating more of like the Jewish heritage that we have than we usually see here, which was nice.
Okay. One of the things we did was we went on part of the Freedom Trail. I don't think we did it as thoroughly as we would have had the sun been shining, but they were very game and tromped through the rain to lots of things. So what was your favorite stop on the Freedom Trail, or what did you think was the most informative?
Well, I'd have to say King's Chapel is definitely the most informative stop, but since we're going to talk about that later, I'll try to focus on something else. I guess another interesting stop was at a cemetery that we just sort of came upon while we were walking around in the rain, and it was very interesting. It had Paul Revere's grave and Sam Adams, just a bunch of prominent revolutionary people, and it was, I don't really know what exactly about that was so special, but somehow it just felt very cool to be there and to see these things.
And one thing that was funny about that was apparently in the 1800s sometime, some people thought, okay, well, this isn't very organized, so because they had just put the graves kind of in random places. So they thought, oh, well, we're just going to move the gravestones so that they're in line, so it's all nice and organized. So they don't actually correspond to where the people were buried. So that's kind of interesting.
There were also, like, skull and crossbones out in a lot of the graves. They were all, like, sort of tipped over and coming out of the ground a bit. But it was still,
Oh, that was, like, she was saying skinny limestone, like, gravestones. Oh, and there's this other stop that we went to, which was this Old South Meeting House, which is where...
Is that what you were going to say?
That's where there were a bunch of meetings during, well, I guess throughout history, but at various times in the Revolutionary War when they were planning what they were going to do, and just, where people throughout history have met and had planned different things. I don't know. So they had a bunch of exhibits that were showing different things that had gone on there. And, like, George Washington had spoken there and just various things like that. It's just cool to see, think about all the things throughout history that have happened.
Thanks. So one of the things that we did was, for a long time, way last fall, Rebecca had contacted the UUA and set up a tour for us and meeting with the youth staff. Or somebody from the youth staff. So I wondered, what were your impressions of that?
They were very, very disorganized. Basically, when we got there, we got to 25 Beacon Street, which is where the UUA is. And when we got in there, the person at the front desk told us to go to another building, which was a little farther away. That was the building where Beacon Press is, which is, I guess, owned by the UUA. And so we had to go back out in the rain and walk all the way over there. And when we got there, the person, we asked, you know, if the person we were supposed to meet was there, and at first they didn't know who we were talking about. And then when they figured that out, they had to send someone else down, some different person, a younger guy who I guess works on youth programs also. And then he took us all the way back to 25 Beacon Street, and yeah, and we got there and just sort of went up to a library meeting room upstairs and talked with him for a while about various youth programs that were going on. And then it was just sort of done. And that was it. That was pretty much our tour, which was sort of disappointing because we expected something to actually happen while we were there. But we did get to talk to a new person who was down at the front desk who was actually much more informative. And one of you guys actually wants to say something about...
I don't know. Okay. I can't remember the full story.
Okay, so it's 25 Beacon Street, which they were... Okay, they wanted to keep the 25 Beacon Street name. So...
Okay, that 25 Beacon Street was originally the American Unitarian Association headquarters before merger. And it was up the road on the other side of the Capitol from where it is now. And they wanted that building, the state wanted that building for some of their senators, I think. So they asked the AUA to move, and the AUA said, well, we will move into this other lovely building, but we want our same address. So 25 is completely out of order. That must drive any new postman absolutely wild because it's a block away from where it was originally. So that was the story she told us. So then when at merger, the UUA, then that became the UUA headquarters.
And one other thing, when we were talking to this lady at the front desk, the editor of the UU World and who else was it? Their finance guys walked by and she's like, oh, that's the editor of the UU World over there. And we're like, oh. So that was kind of cool. But other than that, we didn't actually get to walk around the building. We just talked to the lady at the front desk. But so that was probably one of our least favorite stops during our trip, actually. But we got some information, I guess. Oh, and we got books. The guy was bribing us with free books. So.
So I think probably the high point of our tour of anything was King's Chapel. They normally don't do tours during the week in the wintertime, only in the summer. But I emailed them, and it turns out the lady who's in charge of the tour guides lived in Madison for a while and really went out of her way to find us a tour guide who came through the pouring rain to meet with us and spent a long time with us. So why don't we talk about that, because that was fun.
Okay. Coming in there, it was a little creepy. But they had, like, the box pews and everything, and the big, what's it called, the pulpit? Yeah, the pulpit. Well, I guess it wasn't so big, but the pulpit, and... I don't know. She was talking to us about that, like, about Paul Revere being there, and he made the, what was the seal? Communion. Okay. They made the communion. Paul Revere made the communion silver after it was, like, stolen? Something? Yeah. And the bell too, I think. So, I don't know. The tour guide was really informative. Nice.
Yes, she was very enthusiastic, which made it a very interesting stop. And she obviously knew what she was talking about. We got to get our picture taken in the Elcott booth. So, you know, Louisa May Alcott, who wrote Little Women. Yeah. So her family went there. And you know, I'm not sure what else.
Okay, there's they had this governor's pew on the side, which was like clad with this big, I don't even know, drapery, this like velvet. So yeah, and I guess it wasn't really used actually that much, but it's for the it's like it's pre-Revolutionary War, so it would be the governor that was like the king's appointed governor or whatever, and he would sit there when he attended services. And then later on, after the revolution, then no one would sit there except one time, I think George Washington did. Didn't they say that? And but that's still there, just on the side, as like sort of history. And then the time that they converted to Unitarian Universalism was when they had this guy just come out of Harvard, this minister, and is it Freeman? I don't know his first name, Freeman. And so he was preaching Unitarian ideals, and before he could become the minister, he had to be ordained, and the guy that was going to ordain him was saying, no, he's saying that there isn't a Trinity, this is not okay, you can't have this guy. And he said, you know, you can either get out of our church and just become Unitarian with this minister, or otherwise I won't ordain this guy. And they're like, okay, well, we like him, so we'll become a Unitarian. So that's what happened, and most of the congregation just went along with it, and the people that didn't left, I guess. So that's all because of this one minister that they liked how he preached. They decided, okay, we're going to become Unitarian. But they're different than... Yes. And it was Church of England before, that's what she said. And, so they, I think it's John Freeman, I don't know. Freeman, their minister, he took the Book of Common Prayer and, as our tour guide put it, took a Sharpie marker to it and just took out anything that he didn't like. And so that's the revised version that they still use today.
Yes, and she showed us their sort of crypt area underneath the church. And apparently at some point in Boston's history, it became illegal to have a crypt like that. So they just sort of wall up all of the tombs and sort of converted it to their basement. So now it is filled with all sorts of junk, you know, broken chairs, and there's a microwave and a coffee maker. But all the tombs are still down there, and so she showed us around. And they also held an illegal Catholic ceremony down there at some point when the cousin of a French prince or king, I suppose, of a French king was killed by an Irish pirate. They agreed to hold a ceremony for him since it. Catholicism was illegal in Boston at that point. They agreed to hold a ceremony for him down in the crypt and promised France that at some point they would give him, or make some sort of monument for him to commemorate him. And they forgot to do that for a very long time until some people in the French government found the letter specifying that they would do that, and asked if it existed, and I believe this was in the 1970s. That was when they did it, so a couple hundred years later.
They kept their promise.
Yeah, so now they've got a nice big monument for him out front, which is in French.
And it's funny because he's not even Unitarian. He's just some Catholic French guy.
No, there were not stained glass windows. There had been originally, there is one, that's right, but it's covered, and they only, what day did they take? Easter. They only uncover it on Easter. But they took the stained glass out because during the Revolution, because it was called King's Chapel, it was a target for vandalism because, you know, as the patriots, you know, were against the king. So they took them all out at that time. It was fascinating. Yeah, this Catholic ceremony, I never knew that it was illegal to be Catholic in Puritan Boston. So this is, you know, prior to the Revolution. So this was during the revolutionary time, and then after that, so we never did learn when it became legal to be openly Catholic, but this ceremony was very secret. What did you learn about Unitarian Universalism while you were there? Anything?
Okay, so, I mean, this trip, we went thinking it would be more religious, but we came out with more historical information because, I mean, going along the Freedom Trail and everything was more about revolutionary history and stuff than Unitarian Universalism. But it was interesting to go to Arlington Street Church and just see a different way that a church can run. And then going to King's Chapel and seeing how they're Unitarian, but they don't, you know, follow obviously all the traditions that we do, and they still use the Book of Common Prayer and everything. So, I don't know, just seeing a wider variety of different ways that you use can exist.
I suppose, yeah, more than anything else, just sort of gave a different perspective on Unitarian Universalism, you know, more than actually teaching us something new about it. Because, you know, seeing Arlington Street Church, I suppose they were more spiritual about the way they practiced. And it was interesting to sort of see that contrast, because obviously that is not how it is here. And, you know, it's okay. It's just cool to see things done a different way sometimes, too.
Do you think your study of the UU history during the course of the last school year helped kind of helped understand what you were seeing?
It was nice to have our little background on William Ellery Channing and just the general movement of changing to Unitarianism and changing to Universalism, just because that gave a little background for everything that we are seeing there.
Yeah, the background of Universalism.
Oh, I don't think we'll spend a lot of time.
That's rather.
She's wondering what the background of Universalism is. And I said, well, that's for another service, I think. What was the most fun while you were there?
I'm not really sure. I mean, it was all very interesting. I guess pretty much anything that wasn't outside was good. So, you know, I don't know. I think if we had been there during a different time of the year when the weather was better, I probably would have liked to have done more outside, actually walk the Freedom Trail a bit more instead of just sort of hiding in cafes and avoiding the outdoors. Yeah.
I don't know.
What?
What play did you see?
Oh God, what was it called?
We went to see this community opera that Barb's cousin Margot and her daughter Tavery were in. So it wasn't like super high class. It was just a community opera that a bunch of little kids were in and stuff. It was fun to watch.
It was called Springtime for Haman.
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
For Haman.
For Haman.
Yeah, it's an Old Testament story that was adapted with musical numbers. So I guess that was fun.
We did not know that. No, that's Revolutionary War. She wondered if it was connected with the Underground Railroad. For your last question, what would you recommend that the next mentoring group in 3 or 4 years go back to Boston? Did you get enough out of it that you think it would be a good trip to repeat?
I definitely liked it, but again, like I said, we did a lot more revolutionary history than we did UU stuff, and some kind of our experience at the UUA turned us off from the UU aspect of it. So we were talking about maybe going to GA, General Assembly, as a trip, and that might be a good idea for the next one. But I definitely enjoyed it, and I think it made us come together as a group more, so that's an advantage too.
I think that it could be good to do the trip again, since we've had this experience and sort of know what to expect, and it could provide us with the information we need to better plan for something like this in the future and sort of be more organized once we got there. But I think overall it probably would be better just to do General Assembly. I think you'd get, the high school group would get a lot more out of that as far as the religious factor goes.
It's sort of hard to tell because we did sort of hide a lot. So I'm sure we could have done a lot more if it wasn't so rainy and windy and stuff. So I don't know.
Before we do discussion, we'd like to show you, and we may not have much time for it, we'd like to show you just a sample of some of the pictures that the kids took. Madeline and Caitlin both had digital cameras, so we've got that. And then Gavin is into the old-fashioned photography. So he has some prints that he's done that are out in a notebook on the table in the lobby. So let's go get that set up. Why don't you bring the other mic, too. And while they're setting that up, I wanted to tell just a little bit about the class that they had, this coming-of-age class, which is the first time we've done that here. And they covered a lot of different topics, covered UU history. They covered spiritual practice, and quite a number of members of the congregation did go down and talk to them about their personal spiritual practice. I think that was very valuable. We talked about the history of Unitarianism and Universalism. They got way more on Universalism than Unitarianism because, having been raised a Universalist, I'm better at Universalist history. So, and then they got so historied out that by the time we got to the Unitarian part, they said, oh, we've got to do something else. And then they also covered leadership skills, social action, and which they mostly had last year. And then, I just lost my place. Oh, and then how to put together a service. And Ralph came down and talked to them about how to build a Sunday morning program, and hence this is part of their coming-of-age program.
All right. So this is one of the first pictures. We're in the airport, and we wanted to get tickets for the T, which is their subway system, including buses and subway. And for some reason, we were trying to, count our cash and everything, and it has this huge sign that says no cash. So, yeah, somehow we missed that. I don't know. So this is Tavery, which is the 7-year-old that we got to stay with, and we made fast friends with her. She's rather outgoing.
It's me with a pink turtle on my head. This is in Margot's house, and Tavery just enjoyed putting stuffed animals on us, so.
Especially Gavin.
This is Arlington Street Church. It's rather spectacular, as you can see. And the next picture is next to it with, that's William Ellery Channing. So, oh.
And that's right across from the Boston Commons and Boston Gardens.
This is from the community opera. So, this is exciting. Yeah, I don't know. The guy in the blue robes, he was a very strong singer.
And he was just a middle schooler, I think.
I think he was a high schooler.
Was he?
I think he was a high schooler. He was young.
This is Harvard Square. And you can kind of see, I think, in the background, those are Harvard dorms. And then that's where we went before we went to go get seafood. Which, yeah, right there. Dolphin seafood. And so Barb was kind enough to take us out for seafood.
Except, of course, Gavin doesn't eat fish or meat, so we had to have them make something without for him.
Yeah. This is an underground bus stop where it kind of connects to the subway, so it was great that they had the combination of the two forms of transportation so we can just catch a bus quick. Yeah. That's the little stone that marks the Freedom Trail, like a stop on the Freedom Trail. So you can see on either side there's like the trail of bricks that showed where the Freedom Trail went, so you could actually like physically follow it. It's Boston Common, and it's this giant sort of park that we got to walk through a few times. Us under our umbrellas.
This is the Granary Cemetery that...
Yeah, this is the one with Paul Revere, I believe, yeah. And if you look sort of up to the left, the big pillar that is Benjamin Franklin's mother, I believe.
Well, or whole family, I think.
Whole family? Yeah. Okay, it's the whole family over there. Yeah. Well,
oh.
Because it was underground, and I think it was apparently creating sort of a nasty smell, too.
Yeah, that was in 1890.
Yeah, and it's considered, like, unsanitary. It was a while ago.
Yeah. They had, you know, they used the crypt actively from 16-something or other to 1890, and then they people were complaining that it smelled, so they required them to brick it up. That was Paul
Revere's
Revere.
Tomb. Yeah, Revere's tomb. There's lots of pennies there.
For some unknown reason.
This is the site of the first public school, and it's obviously not there anymore, but they just have a little sidewalk mosaic to show where it was.
Actually, it was displaced when King's Chapel expanded, so it's right behind King's Chapel.
This was a memorial that they had for the Irish that were over in Ireland during the potato famine, and Boston apparently got together a lot of funds and sent over charity for them during this time. So then there's a second statue in the next picture that's commemorating the Irish people that came to America, and so obviously it makes them look a little more healthy. And... But, I mean, they say, you know, it's great that these people came over, but in reality, they were fine sending the funds over there, but they really didn't want the immigrants coming to Boston.
How old are the statues?
How old are the statues? I don't know.
This is in the Old South Meeting House, and they just sort of have a whole display, chronological display going across the side, so yeah, I can't quite read which part that was for. I'm sure that had some, yeah. Oh, this is very old. I mean, this was around, this is like pre-revolutionary war.
Yeah, they had a lot of the meetings when they were inciting the revolution here, because Nathaniel Hall would have been the logical place to have those meetings, but it was too small. So many people wanted to come, and this was the largest meeting hall at the time in Boston, which is why the meetings were held here. It was then a congregational church.
That's Margaret Sanger. They had a little statue of her, and she's taped up because she wanted to protest that they weren't letting her speak about birth and women's rights issues. So she purposely was making a protest by taping up her mouth. Finagle bagel. We were very excited with all the bagels in Boston, and we made this goal that we were going to have bagels. And yeah, so we went the whole day around the Freedom Trail, and then we're like, okay, we have to get bagels. So that's where we went, because it was the coolest name of all the bagel shops.
It's the Capitol building on Beacon Street. It's right by the UUA.
Now, they kept not liking the gold dome, which has a Unitarian connection, because Bullfinch, who was the one who put the gold on the dome, was a Unitarian and a member of King's Chapel. And they have a Bullfinch entrance, didn't they? That's what caught their eye originally.
This is us signing into our
bed and breakfast. Yeah.
B&B, what? I can't think of the name.
Pickett House. Was it?
Elliot House. So this is just Barb signing us in. And it was a pretty fancy building, as you can see right there. Crazy wallpaper in all the rooms, and just really, I don't know, fancy looking. Awesome spiral staircase. And we always had to dry our shoes and socks off on radiators that didn't actually do anything, but it gave us the impression that things were drying off. But they never really got dry throughout the whole trip. We just